mornings. I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, yet another crisis for business. The latest Career Optimism Index finds workplace anxiety is skyrocketing. Also this morning, longtime 81st District Representative Jim Hoops has announced his candidacy to succeed Rob McCauley in the Ohio Senate. He'll join us to talk about his campaign. It's tax deadline day. If a big refund from the IRS is your largest yearly economic windfall, then you need a better financial plan. And the good news is, it doesn't have to be complicated. And happening around town, City Mission gearing up for their third annual Break the Cycle of Homelessness tour. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 15th, 2025. You know that tax deadline day used to be March 15th? Back up until, around the mid-30s, I think they changed it? It was March 15th, and then they changed it to April 15th. And I think the reason why was because it was too close to St. Patrick's Day. It was hard to celebrate all things green when the government had just taken it all away from you. And so they separated those two things by a month. So now at least we get a few extra weeks to celebrate the green before it disappears. No, I'm just kidding, of course. But it is tax day, and with that in mind, multiple restaurants are offering customers a sweet break with some discounted or even free food and drink offers. Today, Burger King is offering their Royal Perks members 1 cent cheeseburgers with any purchase totaling at least a dollar or more at participating restaurants. All right. Krispy Kreme, customers can cash in on April 15th when they buy a dozen glazed or assorted donuts. You get a second dozen for just the price of sales tax. So that's kind of cool. I have a clever promotion. Taco Bell rewarding members. Taco Bell rewards members, it says here, can get $1 toasted cheddar street chalupas, but only between 2 and 3 p.m. today. So just for that hour, you can get $1 toasted cheddar sweet chalupas, street chalupas. And 7-Eleven is offering a $10.40 discount. You get the tie-in, 10-40, right, for the tax form. A $10.40 discount on orders of $20 and up with the code WRITEOFF on the 7Now delivery app. Now, I don't know if that promotion includes Speedway stores and the Speedy Cafe, because they're owned by 7-Eleven, but it just says 7-Eleven. But I guess you can ask. But some of the deals that are out there, and there are others too, but those are the ones that I immediately noted, restaurants and such in our area. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started. Yesterday, did you happen to see this? Yesterday, the president welcomed the Ohio State University national championship football team to the White House. And yes, when he announced or introduced the team, he said the Ohio State University. Emphasis on the word the. He referred to them as the Ohio State football national champions. And there was a bit of an anxious moment when Vice President J.D. Vance, who of course is an Ohio native, dropped part of the championship trophy at the White House ceremony. It says here the Buckeyes were there to celebrate their national championship victory when the Vice President went to hold the trophy up. The base of the trophy came apart and fell out of the Vice President's hands, while someone else had to hold the actual trophy part. J.D. Vance, not just an Ohio native, but an Ohio State alum, gave remarks at the ceremony alongside President Trump, but almost dropped the trophy there. Fumble! He was not a football player, so obviously. And one other Ohio-related story that I saw in the news on the Newswire this morning. This is kind of interesting. Some Ohio counties are going back to paper poll books for the upcoming primary election on May 6th. So it's just a couple of weeks away, and Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose has issued an order due to security concerns, what he says are security concerns, with an electronic poll book device. Now, how serious these concerns are, or whether they're just kind of capitalizing on this whole election security thing, but the Secretary of State has issued an order not to use the electronic poll book device in counties where it is being used. They did not say which counties or how many total counties are impacted so far, but a report from Denison University claims that paper poll books will be in use in more than half of Ohio's 88 counties. Moving away from the electronic devices could contribute to longer lines at the polls. So when you go to vote on May 6th, allow yourself a little extra time is the bottom line, because the paper poll books are back, replacing the electronic poll books. All right. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Once we get past tax deadline day, we get past Easter, the next big thing on the calendar is Star Wars Day on May 4th. You know, because May the 4th be with you. And the Little Vegas Chapel in Las Vegas is offering Star Wars-themed weddings this year on May 4th, Star Wars Day. There are two packages available. Yoda, one for me. Yoda, one for me is one package. Yoda, one for me. And Love Star, playing off the Death Star thing. Love Star. Both of these packages offer an officiant dressed as either Princess Leia or Darth Vader. Even the wedding certificate is Star Wars themed. A photo promoting the event shows a stormtrooper groom marrying his Princess Leia as Darth Vader threatens him. Fortunately, an Elvis impersonator is there. Of course, because of course it's Vegas. Of course, there's an Elvis impersonator who is there to keep Darth Vader at bay. The Love Star package is available for $600, while the Yoda one for me will set star-crossed lovers back $860. So, if you've ever imagined getting married on Star Wars Day to completely round out the Star Wars geekdom in your life, then the Little Vegas Chapel is your place. May the 4th be with you. All righty then. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, this certainly is an item that just kind of makes you go, hmm. Redfin is the real estate company. They gather and compile a lot of statistics related to real estate, home buying, and so on. Redfin is out with their list of the most in-demand neighborhoods in the country. Prospect Heights. Prospect Heights is in Brooklyn. Prospect Heights, number one on the list of hot neighborhoods of 2025. Clinton Hill is also right up there as number two. And isn't that also in the, I'm not sure exactly where Clinton Hill is. I know Prospect Heights is Brooklyn. I think Clinton Hill is same general area, but those are the top two hottest neighborhoods in America, following a 105% spike in home sales from a year ago. 105% higher home sales than a year ago. I don't know why. I don't know why those neighborhoods have spiked so high, but that's what it is. Rounding out the top three hottest neighborhoods, Jenison, Michigan, and Campton Hills and St. Charles, Illinois are the other two. I'm sorry. I read this wrong. It's Prospect Heights and Clinton Hill area in Brooklyn. That's number one. And then Jenison, Michigan, number two. Campton Hills and St. Charles in Illinois, number three. So, hottest neighborhoods in America for whatever reason. But if you're looking to move to a hot neighborhood, those are your best. But I would imagine that it's probably going to be harder to find homes in those neighborhoods because they're so hot. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly cloudy today and windy with a high in the upper 40s, partly cloudy tonight, low in the middle 30s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office, Findlay Police Department, and other police, fire, and EMS agencies across the area and country are saluting their dispatchers this week during National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Sergeant Mark Price with the Hancock County Sheriff's Office says dispatchers play a crucial role by providing that initial contact with people to get them the help they need.
That's all done by those individuals sitting in the dispatch centers, working together to help us as first responders out in the field gain the information needed in a timely fashion so we can do our jobs.
Price says while the Sheriff's Office and Findlay Police Department each have their own dispatch centers, they work together a lot and work well together. He's asking anyone who knows a dispatcher to reach out to them this week and thank them for what they do. Get more on National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week in this story on our website. With Congress setting aside $2 million to cover costs, an Ohio city is preparing to host a major international event.
More than 1,000 visitors from dozens of countries are due to converge on Dayton for a NATO Parliamentary Assembly meeting during a four-day stretch next month. The event is timed with the 30th anniversary of the Dayton Peace Accords. Cincinnati.com reports Dayton police are already working with state and federal security experts, including adding fencing, concrete barriers, drones, and radios.
ONN's Jared Allen reporting. The Hancock County Veterans Service Office will be holding several social events throughout the year that will give the public an opportunity to interact with veterans, ask questions, and enjoy company and conversation with others. The first event will be a coffee social on Wednesday. Other events include a brewery social and a wine social. You can see the full list in the story on our website. The Veterans Service Office says all of the events are casual, so come hang out and get to know your local veterans and learn more about all the services provided by the Hancock County Veterans Service Office. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, things have been a little crazy financially and economically over the past month. As we mentioned yesterday, Friday's consumer confidence numbers took a significant hit in the mid-month reading. And the latest Career Optimism Index also shows workplace anxiety is skyrocketing. Joining us this morning is Dr. John Woods, founding director of the University of Phoenix Career Institute, which publishes this index. Dr. Woods, tell us a little bit about the Career Optimism Index, what it is, what it measures, and what some of the key findings are in this year's report.
Thanks, Chris. Excited to be here chatting with you today. The Career Optimism Index is an annual study. It's year five for us conducting this study. The University of Phoenix Career Institute places this study to try and understand workers' feelings and perceptions about their career prospects. We also survey employers. And we try and identify some similarity and differences between the perceptions of the worker and the employer amidst those workforce trends. This year, as you said, we're seeing some good news and some bad news. Some of the troubling data is that workers are feeling a loss of professional control of their careers. That's contributing to significant burnout. In fact, a record number in the survey this year, 51%, are saying they feel burnt out. So that's concerning, but there's reason for optimism as well. And we think there's some solutions here that come through in the data too.
So I want to put a little bit of context to the numbers. And as you said, 51% is a record. I was going to ask how they compare, how these numbers compare to previous reports. But you say this is a record for the years that you've been doing the survey. Why?
Yeah, trending up. And I think that feeling of burnout is associated with some of the other numbers we see in the survey. So 60% of employers in the survey indicate they prefer hiring externally over upskilling and reskilling existing workers to empower the existing workforce. And this is despite proven higher costs and lower retention among workers with that strategy. So with that number of employers still preferring to find new people to do the work, we think that's a significant driver, that anxiety, loss of career control feelings that people have, and the associated burnout. So those trends are numbers moving in the wrong direction over the last 5 years.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I want to make clear, obviously, this data for the report was compiled long before all of the upheaval that we've seen the past couple of weeks in the financial markets. So anyone who might be worried about how a trade war might impact their business, that would be understandable. But that's not reflected here. I would imagine that if you were to ask again, given what we've seen over the past month, you might even see more anxiety.
Yeah, I think that's good insight. I think what we've seen in the last few weeks probably would be even more settling and come through in these numbers as greater anxiety for sure.
So when it comes to addressing that anxiety and restoring career optimism, is that the responsibility of the employer? Are we blaming the employer for the numbers being what they are? Or is that something that the employee has to take on him or herself?
Yeah, that's a great question. In the survey results that we're looking at, 86% of workers say they're always looking for ways to expand their skill sets. 71% say that they realize they'll need to improve their skill set for any kind of career advancement. So from those numbers, we're seeing a receptiveness among the employees, an acknowledgement in the importance of reskilling and upskilling. And so turning to look at what the employers are telling us in the survey data, again, more looking outside than inward to address their talent needs. We think a real solution is for employers to provide a wide range of upskilling and reskilling opportunities to their employees as a means of making the employees feel more valued, more engaged, more effective, and as a result, more likely to stay. In fact, 34% of employees report that they would be feeling less likely to be burnt out if they felt more invested in with training and development.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. What can employers do for their part to reduce that employee burnout and ensure a resilient workforce?
Yeah, employers can invest definitely in their workforce in different ways. One is to offer different pathways for growth with real intentional career planning with their workers. This fosters a sense of trust and autonomy and makes employees, as I said, feel more engaged, more adaptive, more productive. And actually, one of the things we're seeing come through in the results this year is that employers can harness the power of artificial intelligence, AI, which presents them with some real cost-effective, scalable solutions for closing skill gaps. AI can help them very quickly develop training materials, for example, that employees can use.
And then, because not all of this is going to fall on the employer, to a certain extent, employees have to, take it upon themselves to do what they can to make themselves more valuable to either their present employer or potentially a future employer. What can employees do to calm their own anxiety, I guess, if you will?
Yeah, we see this every year in the Career Optimism Index results that employers do offer training and development. Sometimes employers need to be encouraged to offer more. But generally, training and development opportunities are available everywhere. And what the worker needs to do is understand where those are. They need to have proactive conversations with the manager about their desire to access these different training opportunities or materials. They need to, like you said, be real proactive themselves and make it known that they're willing, able, interested in participating in such upskilling or reskilling opportunities. So that makes them more ready to evolve in their position, and showing that they can adapt, showing that they can improve their skill sets is oftentimes what the employer is looking for.
Yeah. And I guess as a sidebar, just opening up those lines of communication between employers and employees obviously can be a benefit in and of itself. So there is that as well. Again, Dr. John Woods is founding director of the University of Phoenix Career Institute. The latest Career Optimism Index is out. Where do folks learn more about it?
Yeah, the full results of the survey can be found on our website. There's a tremendous number of insights, both for workers and employers, contained on the website. And that can all be found at phoenix.edu/career-institute.
Certainly some interesting stuff worth digging into. Dr. John Woods, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on today. Enjoyed it.
So yesterday, he made it official. Longtime 81st District Representative Jim Hoops has announced his candidacy to succeed Rob McCauley in the Ohio Senate. And Mr. Hoops, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thanks
today.
For having me this morning, Chris. Thank you.
This announcement here. First of all, let me ask the obvious question. This is kind of the elephant in the room, I guess, if you will. This is convenient timing. You are term limited out of your seat in the House.
Yep, that is correct.
Mr. McCauley is term limited out of his seat in the Senate. You're both from Napoleon, so moving to the Senate seat is logical, but is that really what, and I know you didn't write the rules, neither of you wrote the rules on this, but is that really what lawmakers had in mind when they instituted term limits some years ago?
Well, I think that's what was put into law. That's what was voted on, mm-hmm. into the Constitution.
And you're not the only one to have done that.
I think it gives a choice. I mean, I've always felt, term limits were there every time you had an election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been good and been bad with term limits. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that's something, people are willing to look at again to see what they, what they can do with it. Because it does take away some of the, the education experience and, what you learn down there. Because 8 years mm-hmm. goes pretty quick. And,
yeah.
And, I had an opportunity to be there, even before that, back in 1999 to 2006, and then got out of it for about 15 or 12 years, which was nice because it gave me a chance to look at, some other things out there, dealing with energy, dealing with workforce development, because that's mm-hmm. where I worked down with AMP Ohio in Columbus, and then with Northwest State Community College, mm-hmm. With workforce, and then never thinking I'd be going back down there, and then I had an opportunity to do that. I asked my wife; she gave me permission, and here I am. But it's gone quick.
I was going to ask a little bit about your background, because obviously, being from the 81st district, that would be Henry County and Williams and Fulton County.
That's correct.
So not as well known here for voters in Hancock County. To talk a little bit about your record, your background, what you kind of bring to the table.
I grew up in southern Henry County in Deschler, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And when I was young, I used to always come over here to Findlay, where our family would.
Yeah, so not so far away.
No, not so far. I can remember the gas wars in high school when gas, at the Clark station there on Route 12, when it was like 23 cents a gallon. So we'd come over here to get that. Plus, you have Dietz's ice cream here and Jack and Doe's, and every time we go by here, when my wife is with me, because dare I stop, if she's not there, and then she finds out I stopped at Dietz's, we always have to stop and get some ice cream. So, I know the area. In fact, the first time I was in the state legislature, I actually represented Van Wert, Paulding, and Putnam County, and then Henry County. And now I'm further north. And so I've represented almost two-thirds of the Senate district.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you've been involved in state politics for a good number of years. What makes you want to segue to the Senate seat and stay in
politics? Thanks, Chris. That's a good question, because I feel there's a lot of things that we still need to get done. I enjoy, getting to know people, helping them out if they have a constituent issue. You know, unfortunately, sometimes it does take us to kind of help push it through when there's some issues out there. And I think, some of the issues, I just believe that Ohio is just ripe for some really good stuff. I mean, I look at what we have, where we're located as a state. We have natural resources, which includes water and gas, over in eastern Ohio, mm-hmm. Because one of the big issues is energy, and we have a lot of companies looking at Ohio because of the energy and then also the water. I feel we have a good transportation system here, especially up in northwest Ohio. I feel our education system is very good, K through 12 to higher ed, mm-hmm. and we have good training centers, like up around Toledo area, to get people, because the one thing I've seen is we're an aging state. We have a lot of people that are ready to retire, and we need to make sure that we train our future leaders, so they're ready to take over, because they're going to be our future doctors and nurses and farmers and manufacturing groups, CEOs, accountants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we need to make sure that occurs. And that's the kind of stuff I want to get involved with and stay involved with.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned getting to know people, and this will be a process of getting to know people.
Yep.
What do you have to learn about the individuals that don't overlap from the 81st district in the House to the first Senate district?
Well, I feel what's neat about this position is every person has a story. They had something happen in their life, and they are because of what they've gone through. And mm-hmm. so I always try to put myself in their shoes if they have an issue or if they have a challenge or if they have something great going on. I was at an event this past Saturday up in Edgerton. And it dealt with families who had experienced a loss of a loved one through like drug overdose or mm-hmm. suicide. Mm-hmm. I mean, and your heart just poured out for them. And then later in the day, I was at an FFA dinner up in West Unity, up in Williams County. Mm-hmm. And you had all these young high school kids getting up and going through parliamentary procedures and that, and you're going, man, could I have done that when I was in high school? So that's what I enjoy doing, is finding out what people are thinking, because again, I feel this is what makes this state and this area of the state, a great place to live. I mean, we talked about it earlier. You enjoy being up here.
Yeah.
Because of just what they stand for and what they love.
As you were talking about some of the key issues that you see and that I'm sure will be part of this campaign moving forward, education as a key part. And obviously, in the latest House budget, education funding has been a key sticking point for a lot of public schools, particularly, who say that the state legislature has not fulfilled its promise to change the school funding formula as agreed upon some years back. And you were part of all of this.
That's correct.
What is your response? Well, at the same time, they say a lot more money is being funneled to private and charter schools. What's your response to that criticism?
Well, first of all, I think vouchers are here to stay. Mm-hmm. I believe in choice that parents have. In fact, I was involved with that issue back in the early 2000s when we first voted on it, and that was to deal with school issues up in Cuyahoga County.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's expanded, and Mike, I do have concerns with some of the things that are in the budget. And you have to remember, the budget we're like in step two of a six-step process.
Yes, so we were talking about this the other day. There's a lot that has to happen.
I'll continue to work on the issues because I really believe we have great public schools here, you know, in this part of the state. And we, you know, just so people realize, we did not cut funding. They may not have gotten every, you know, the full amount that they thought they were going to get, but but we made sure, because we worked, there's about a handful of us in the house that made sure that at least, you know, the schools didn't lose anything.
Yeah.
Now, one of the issues that we still have to work on that I have concerns about, And I voted for the budget. I mean, I felt, you know, when you look at the budget, it's 5,000 pages long, and you're going to like some things and not like some things, but you want to move it along and keep working on it. You want to be in the room, you know. And so there's one issue there where we talk about the carryover that schools, you know, the 30%. I feel I'd rather get rid of that because I feel, you know, people have put board members in, voted them in, because they felt they're the ones that are going to lead, you know, the direction, you know, make the policies for each school. And I feel that they're the ones that need to make the decision. And so you have schools who, you know, have some pretty healthy carryover. But I think it's their decision. You know, they need to make sure that they let their constituents know, why do you have this type of carryover? Now, there might be some that they, you know, have a really healthy carryover. You know, maybe we need to look at those, you know, tweak that a little bit. But that's one issue, because I don't want to get involved as a state government, get involved locally on how people should run their schools.
And real quickly, you also talked about the importance of economic development and avoiding the brain drain, which is something, that an issue that we've talked about going back several years, in fact. So this is a kind of a known quantity as an issue in Ohio. And one of the things, the governor has talked about this, we talked about it during previous legislative sessions as well, turning Ohio into kind of the Silicon Valley of the Midwest, and with the investment in, by Intel and data centers, multiple data centers, hundreds of them popping up in the state. Can we do that? Is that something that is Ohio's future?
I think it's something that we can do. I mean, I feel, I mean, our biggest thing, when I say, you know, we need people that are trained, because now, you know, a company that maybe has, you know, that used to have 750 people, maybe they only need 300 because they have robots. But you need somebody to run those robots. And so those, that's a way of overcoming that lack of people. But we still need, you know, we need the everyday people, like the electricians, the plumbers, the, you know, all those type of people. But yes, I feel we can do it. It's just, you know, and that's one of the goals too as a legislator, is to provide that platform so people and businesses can, you know, can expand and they can, you know, grow. And because I feel that's the other issue of Ohio is doing better is, you know, the tax structure that we have. You know, we want to be competitive, and, you know, we want to keep the rates low and even lower, but then spread the base. And that's by bringing people in, you know, to do that. And then the other thing is regulations. Now, some regulations are good. You need them, you know, to keep things going in the right direction. But there's some, I feel, unnecessary regulations out there that we have to continue to look at and make sure if we don't need them, get them, you know, eliminate them.
Again, longtime 81st District Representative Jim Hoops, now a candidate for the 1st District seat in the Ohio Senate to replace the term-limited Rob McCauley in that role. I'm sure this will be the first of many conversations as we go through the process. But Jim Hoops, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris, for the opportunity.
So, of course, today is tax deadline day, and a lot of people like to brag about the big refund check that they get back every year. IRS says the average refund is now over $3,000, but that is not a good thing. Think about it. If you're getting big money back, what you have actually done is loaned your money to the government interest-free for a year. So if that is you, you need a better plan. How many times have you been told that when it comes to your financial security, you have to have a plan? You can't just guess. Well, for financial writer Carl Richards, though, he says the best way to start making that plan is actually by making some guesses. He says the hidden truth about personal finance is that it is much more about the personal than the financial. He is a longtime columnist for the New York Times and Yahoo Finance, and not long ago we talked to him about his book, The One-Page Financial Plan, A Simple Way to Be Smart About Your Money. Carl, you say the dirty little secret among financial advisors is that all of this advice that sounds like gobbledygook to the rest of us is oftentimes deliberately complicated.
Yeah, I don't know when or why that... Well, actually, I do, simply because I've spent so much time thinking about it, but it's really crazy that for some reason we think that because, and here's where it comes from, Chris. I think people have confused simple and the concept of easy.
Yeah.
Right? Something, when something feels like making financial decisions and having the discipline might feel hard, and it might be hard, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be simple. And so we feel like because it's hard, then the answer must therefore be really complex. And then, of course, the traditional financial services industry perpetuates that myth, right?
Right.
It doesn't need to be hard. I'm just begging people to believe me. I'm in that place where I've been warned about as too simple, and I'm yelling to your listeners, Chris, the water's fine. Come on in. Right?
But it is true that there is no one-size-fits-all answer to some of those questions like, how much should I be saving so that I can retire? I mean, there is no one-size-fits-all answer.
Yeah, for sure. I think those rules of thumb that you get in most financial planning books are a good place to start, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's where things get a little complicated. And again, I get a little hard. They don't get complicated. The template is what I try to do in this book, is give you some tools and templates to apply to your situation. The template should be simple. If it's not simple, you're not there yet. Now, the application may get a little messy, you know, a little personal,
mm-hmm.
But the template itself, the concept should be relatively simple.
And again, you talk about, well, it's right there in the title, boiling it down to one page. Explain the concept here.
Yeah, so here's, well, maybe it'd be best with a quick story. My wife and I, a couple of years ago, probably two years ago, we were making a financial decision, and it felt like it was like, wait, I felt a little deja vu in the discussion, and both of us did. We're like, haven't we done this before?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, yeah, and we spent all this mental energy doing it, and we came up with like, wait a second, we've done this before. So we took out a piece of paper, you know, a Sharpie and a piece of cardstock, and we wrote a statement of why. You'll find this on page 11. We wrote a statement of why, which is simply spend time with our kids doing things we love, and what's not on that in the book is, and serve in the community. That's why we're doing what we do. And then we said, okay, what are the three or four things we're focused on right now? And for us, that was funding retirement accounts, saving for the kids' college, and saving for a house. Now, what's interesting is a couple months later, we found ourselves in a similar conversation. Like, we had an opportunity to invest in a business or something like that.
Yeah.
And we thought, wait, we've done this before. We pulled out the paper, and we're like, oh, that's right. We don't have to even think about it. We've already done this. Here's what we're committed to. So that's the idea behind the one-page plan, is put the stuff that actually matters on one page, handwrite it using a Sharpie. Don't carve it in stone in a granite with a chisel, because it's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Be flexible, and it gives you the tool to remind yourself of what you said was important when you were thinking clearly.
You know, you mentioned that, you know, not be careful not to set things. And so because priorities do change over time. And one of the things that you point out in the book, and this is something that I think many people really haven't considered when you talk about rebalancing, maybe rebalancing your priorities, rebalancing how you are saving or investing. We've been told that we should do that as we get closer to retirement. But the thing that I hadn't really thought much about until I was reading the book, the fact that the market is not stagnant. So you have to be ready to rebalance. And again, it sounds like this is starting to get complicated again.
Yeah, no. So here's the way to simplify it. When you're talking specifically about the investment side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you make an investment, okay, you've got your goals. You're really clear about why you're doing things. You've got a set of goals. Then and only then do you go out and design an investment portfolio. This is the big mistake, the big disconnect, is most people don't connect their investment decisions with their own goals, right?
They're yeah.
running around filling prescriptions from strangers on TV. Don't do that. You build your investment portfolio based on your goals. Well, then guess what's going to happen? The market's going to change. Like, it's going to move up and down. Now, you're not going to change your investment process because your goals didn't change. All you're going to do is go back to, you know, if you started with 50% in stocks and 50% in bonds and the market goes way up, you're going to wake up one day and find yourself with 70% in stocks, 30% in bonds, way more than you need, way more risk than you get than you signed up for, and you're simply going to say, hey, when that happens, we're going to go back to 50-50, and we're not going to think about it. We're not going to talk to our neighbors about it. We're just going to go back to 50-50. Why? Because that was the portfolio that matched our goals.
Mm-hmm. You do talk in the book about finding a financial advisor who can kind of guide you, who will not make this overly hard or overly complicated.
Yeah, I mean, the term I use there is, you know, find a real financial advisor.
Yeah.
And I wish there was a way to Google that and have real ones come up versus the fake ones.
That would make it much easier.
It wouldn't.
But then we wouldn't need the book. So
I wish there was a designation that said real financial advisor. And certified financial planner sort of starts to get us close. But I think even more important is not what somebody calls themselves and what title they have. It's what do they do. And so when you sit down with a financial advisor for the first time, if you get the sense that they're trying to write you prescriptions without diagnosing, it's time for you to leave.
Hmm.
Right? Like, make sure that you're feeling thoroughly diagnosed long before anybody ever suggests an investment product to you, because how would they know, right? So don't fill prescriptions unless you feel thoroughly diagnosed.
Yeah. A lot of great advice, down-to-earth advice here. As we said, the personal finance is more about the personal than the financial, is kind of the theory from which you come in this book. And even though the financial is part of this is very important, you make the point that so many people just become paralyzed with that fear of because of the complicated the fact that it seems so complicated. Again, it is called The One-Page Financial Plan, A Simple Way to Be Smart About Your Money. Do you have a website in conjunction with the book we can guide folks to?
Yeah, the best place to go is my website, behaviorgap.com.
We have a link on our webpage to learn more about the book, The One-Page Financial Plan, A Simple Way to Be Smart About Your Money. And for anyone who's getting a big windfall back from the government, as we say, this is a good time to put that one-page financial plan into motion and maybe look for ways to not give an interest-free loan to the government in future years. But go to goodmornings.net and learn more. Happy tax deadline day to you.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Florida woman has been accused of attempting to sell human remains on Facebook Marketplace. You can buy anything on Facebook. Even human remains, apparently. Kimberly Shopper, age 52, faces charges of trading in human tissue. The Orange County Police Department in Florida first received a report in December of 2023 that a business called Wicked Wonderland was selling human bones. According to the description of the business online, quote, having both come from a medical background, we have a passion for sharing our knowledge and expertise. The page also claimed that the human remains were ethically sourced. Well, at least they're ethically sourced. So everything's okay. But no, authorities found five types of human bones for sale, including skull fragments, a rib, and a vertebrae. The remains are now being tested, apparently to find out who they actually belong to. That is all kinds of weird and rather disturbing there. Doesn't Facebook have a policy on selling human remains? I do believe so. I don't think you can actually do that. And certainly the law says you can't do that. Elsewhere, lots of Florida fun in the broken news today. A woman in Polk County, Florida, is accused of running over her estranged husband's new girlfriend. Well, this at least you can understand. I mean, it's understandable. You shouldn't do this, but at least it's understandable. Deputies say Kristen Reese spotted the victim in the parking lot of a Family Dollar store, chased her down, and struck her with her car. It happened earlier this month on Old Dixie Highway near U.S. 92 in Polk County. The victim suffered a couple of broken bones and is recovering. Ms. Reese is charged with attempted murder, trespassing, and violating probation. She's been in trouble with the law before, as it turns out. Gee, I wonder why that relationship with her ex-husband didn't work out. You know, she seems like such a stable, lovely young lady. Not to be outdone. Now, there's nothing particularly weird about the story. Sometimes it is the name that grabs your attention here. A Florida man identified as Edward Cocaine was arrested for allegedly brandishing a knife at a restaurant employee at a local Subway restaurant there in Florida, Brevard County. Yeah. Mr. Cocaine reportedly got into a dispute with the workers over their bad attitudes. He became so irate with the employees that yelling at them from across the counter wasn't enough, according to a report of the sheriff's office. Edward Cocaine, his name, pulled out the knife, but was restrained and then left the location. However, he was arrested earlier this week and now faces assault charges. Edward Cocaine, his name. Man, how would you like to go through life with that name, you know? So a lot of weird stuff happening today in Florida in the broken news, but maybe it's not just people in Florida. I mean, it's not the people in Florida that are weird. Maybe there's just something in the air in Florida that makes people weird. A man from Canada is behind bars in Florida on suspicion of roaming around Disney. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is not Florida. This is California. It's Disneyland, not Disney World. My apologies. I completely misread that story. This is, forget everything I said. It is just weird Florida people. This weird Canadian person was in California, which, I mean, California, Florida, they're all weird. But anyway, a Canadian man behind bars on suspicion of roaming around Disneyland in the nude. He was arrested on Saturday night in Disneyland's New Orleans Square area. Witnesses said he stripped down and climbed on top of a restaurant, exposing himself to everyone below. Well, it is New Orleans Square. Weird things happen in New Orleans. You just never know what you're going to see. The Anaheim Police Department arrested him on suspicion of trespassing, public nudity, and being under the influence of narcotics. So that'll always get you into trouble. That will always get you into trouble. And finally, here in the broken news this morning, this from Lebanon, Oregon, where a suspect has been arrested for allegedly shooting an AR-15 out of the window of a car. The Linn County Sheriff's Office there in Lebanon, Oregon, says witnesses reported the shooting and that the car was driving recklessly at the time. shooting an AR-15 out of the window of a moving vehicle. The car blew past a deputy, a responding deputy, at 117 miles an hour. The suspect did stop when pulled over by police, when the cops hit their lights. The car did stop. Three people got out of the vehicle and ran off. Passengers were all later arrested. The driver, one Justin Franklin, refused to surrender and had to be bitten by a canine before being arrested. The gun was recovered after being hidden in the bushes. And why? Why was he shooting an AR-15 out of the window of the car? He tried to explain that he was trying to bag a deer. He was shooting at a deer with an AR-15 out of the window of a car moving at 117 miles an hour. Yeah, that's not the way you do it. That's not... I'll tell you what, though, if he actually got the deer, kudos to him. I mean, out of a moving car at 117 miles an hour with an AR-15, that would be pretty impressive. But the story does not say whether he got his deer or not. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey there, I'm Brad. I'm about to win the Tuesday Night Bowling League Championship.
Strike.
I'm also a highway worker for the Ohio Department of Transportation. When you move over and slow down, you're not only giving me room to work, you're making sure I can bowl the winning strike with my buddies.
Roadside workers have lives and families, but when they're on the job, they put it all on the line to protect and serve us. Remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Brought to you by ODOT, USDOT, NHTSA, and ODPS.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Today is tax deadline day. The IRS says so far they have received 101,422,000 returns. Of those, 98.1 million were e-filed, which is actually down 2% from last year, which is kind of interesting. You know how much money the Postal Service has lost in terms of revenue because people are electronically filing instead of mailing in their forms? At 73 cents for a stamp? If those 98.1 million e-filing returns had been mailed instead, the post office would have made $71,674,320. That's what they lost out on. The total number of refunds issued, 67.7 million, meaning roughly 33.7 million people owed money to the IRS this year. And the average refund amount in 2025 is up 3.5% from last year, now at $3,116. That is the average refund for a total amount refunded so far of $211 billion. That's a lot of money the IRS is sending back to people. You get yours? So, happening around town, City Mission is gearing up for their third annual Break the Cycle of Homelessness Tour. Sharon Wise joins us with all the details this morning on how you can be a part of the fun for a great cause. And Sharon, thanks very much for taking the time today. Although I was just thinking maybe we should have been talking about this yesterday. It was so much nicer yesterday morning. People are thinking about getting out and getting on their bikes and exploring today. Maybe not so much, but...
Yeah, definitely.
This is actually coming up. It's about a month away, so hopefully the weather will be much improved by that time. Give us the details on the Break the Cycle of Homelessness Tour.
So this is our third annual. It is May 17th. We are partnering with Blanchard Valley Health System, Domino's, and we have several other small sponsors that are helping us out with this again this year. Mm-hmm. So this program became a thing when... The City Mission offers a bike program. So what that entails is people will donate their bikes gently used. We have volunteers that fix them up, and then the guests can request a bike for use for transportation to get around. With that, then they get to take the bike when they leave. So this was a way to begin showing awareness that cycling is a good way of transportation to get to places mm-hmm. when you need, if you don't have a car.
Yeah.
So we have anywhere from a 5K to 100K. The 5K is our family-friendly one. So we really want people to get out there with their families, with their kids, explore what Finley has to offer. We have lots of trails. We have wonderful things that you can do. This one is out by Fort Finley, and we're going to work on putting up a scavenger hunt for the kids
okay.
to make it more engaging and a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Everybody's like, the 5K sounds like a lot. It's really only a couple miles if you actually convert it.
Right. right.
So, and then the longer routes along the way go through a lot of those surrounding communities, Bluffton, Mount Corey, Pandora. And there's rest stops along the way with snacks and things provided. Afterwards, you come meet back at First Pres. We will be having a barbecue, snacks, goodie bags, things like that for all the cyclists. It's just, it's a good way to get out, enjoy the weather, see the nature, and help support the city mission.
You know, it's interesting you mention the bike program, which was sort of the impetus for all of this, because it is something that we don't often think of. That biking obviously is one way of getting around town, getting to work or getting to wherever you need to go. Mm-hmm. There is that, but oftentimes we don't think if someone is obviously a client of City Mission, they probably don't have reliable transportation in order to do the things that you need to do in order to get back on your feet and become independent again.
That is correct. I mean, a lot of guests come, they don't have cars.
Yeah.
Some of them have misplaced, lost, or not even had a license, you know, depending on their age and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And using a bike to get around is a great way for your independence. It also helps with just getting out and riding, helping with your mental awareness, just in general,
sure.
feeling better.
Yeah, there's that aspect of it as well. And obviously, this is much more attainable for City Mission to provide that form of transportation mm-hmm. as opposed to giving everybody a car, certainly.
So, correct.
Yeah.
yes, definitely.
Not that you wouldn't love to be able to do that, but obviously that's
yeah.
not necessarily
yeah.
realistic. As you mentioned, this is also obviously an event that supports the work that you do at City Mission. And talk a little bit about some of the ways that you help those who are struggling with homelessness within the community, because we drive by the City Mission, we see it, many people will donate to the City Mission, but I'm not sure that everybody really truly understands what all it is that you do.
So we provide anything from shelter, food, clothing. When guests move out, we help them with the move-out vouchers, which we now have, if you're not aware, we have Transformation Thrift Store in our warehouse over there on 330 Walnut Street.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guests need clothing or clothes for shoes, work boots, steel-toed shoes, they come over there with their voucher, their gift certificate, and they get what they need with no cost. And then when they move out, we also help them with things, with furniture, small appliances, dishes, anything you need to start your new home and help with a brighter future. We help them with, if they have issues with addiction, we help get them into rehabs. We help with workforce program, education, anything to get them from where they are to where they're going to be that helps with that brighter future.
Yeah, so a lot more than just a place to lay your head, a safe place to lay your head at night.
No, we have lots of programs with the Restart program, Martha's Home Now for the women with the children, helping those women get back on their feet, whether it's, you know, education, jobs, a new home, anything, daycare, everything they need.
Yeah. And it's so interesting you mentioned, because this is a perfect example of, I think, the things that people don't realize that you do that make a world of difference. I wouldn't even have thought about, you know, helping somebody get back on their feet, but then providing them with, I don't know, pots and pans and dishes for, you know, you get a place and all of a sudden this becomes another expense, things that you don't have that you have to buy. So that can seem simple, but can be a burden for people.
Yep.
Perfect example of that. And
What is the need within the community? How many, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but to kind of give people an idea of the breadth of the problem and the issue that we're addressing within the community, what is the demand like for the services of City Mission?
Well, currently we have 125 beds, and we've been full for a very long time. Mm. Martha's Home, I think, currently has, don't totally quote me, but I believe they have 8 women with children over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then our community window last year, if you're familiar with our community window, we serve meals, hot meals twice a day, Monday through Saturday, and then once on Sunday. That community window alone, and that's not just for the homeless, that's for anybody in the community that needs a meal.
Mm-hmm.
We serve 200,000 meals out there.
Wow.
Last year.
Wow.
So the need is there. It's everybody's like, it's Finley. The need is here, and yeah. It's growing.
Mm-hmm. And these are the types of programs that events such as the Break the Cycle of Homelessness Tour can help provide.
Yes.
Now, how do folks sign up for the? Because, like we said, it's coming up. It's a little more than a month away. It's May 17th. But you can sign up now, right?
Yes, you can sign up now either at FinleyMission.org, our webpage, or you can go to our Facebook page, and it's pinned at the top of our page, and you just click the cycling picture. There's a link in there, and it'll take you right to sign up. Families are $40. Individuals are $35. You can sign up until the day of the event, and we just really hope everybody comes out and has a great day.
All right. We've got a link on our webpage at goodmornings.net for more information about the third annual Break the Cycle of Homelessness Tour to benefit City Mission. And again, Sharon Wise with us this morning. Sharon, thanks very much for taking the time.
Thank
we appreciate
you so much.
It.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, empowering patients and their caregivers in the community. We'll get an update on the work of the Hancock County Parkinson's Network, including details on this month's Empower Walk. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.